podcasting from Houston, Texas. This is part of a series called Evolution Custom Built. I am your host, Eddie Tang, a sophomore here at Rice University. This is Apocalyptic Modern Development, where I seek to uncover the complex, unforeseen consequences of sites of modern development and the many reasons why modern development is a perfect example of inevitable disaster. The term slow violence, coined by Rob Nixon in Slow Violence and the Environmentalism of the Poor, refers to the violence that comes as a direct result of anthropomorphic influence, climate change, toxic drift, deforestation, consequences of war, oil spills, and so on and so forth. This violence builds up incrementally to marginalize the poor, depriving them of their rights to survival, health, shelter, and information. Nixon focuses on the complex issue of temporality. To him, slow violence is not immediate enough for most people to work towards environmentalism. I think that Rob Nixon is trying to frame slow violence in the context of scale. He reveals that because humans think and perceive on a scale of temporality different than that of the planets, inevitable disaster and hyperobjects arise. For this podcast, we are also specifically looking at Timothy Morton's definition of a hyperobject, an entity that transcends humankind in size, time, and scale. Hyperobjects and slow violence, albeit different frameworks of looking at unperceivable problems, are similar. Morton and Nixon both agree that these hyperobjects and problems are only seen from a certain point of view, and that point of view is unavoidably a human one. But therein lies the problem. The temporality of both hyperobjects and the results of slow violence are profoundly different from that of humans. Moreover, the multidimensional nature of these hyperobjects kind of enables these entities to build up slowly over time, similar to the negative consequences of slow violence. Because our inherent perception of problems can only be human, to a sense, we can never find an objective solution to these problems. It seems as if the very nature of hyperobjects indicate that they cannot be conquered, defeated, or destroyed. And it's hard to say that to environmentalists, especially those clinging on to hope that the future of planet Earth can survive with the help of everyone's environmental efforts. Sadly, perhaps the greatest example that disaster is inevitable is one of humanity's greatest achievements, architecture and built space. Modern development, in terms of built landscape, exemplifies this concept that humans think on a different scale than the planets, and thus, we cannot fully rescue the Earth. Let's now look at our first example, a technological innovation that was built in 1990, once heralded as the best solution to the ever-increasing need for electricity, the Taichung Coal Power Plant, based in Longyan Township, Taichung County in central Taiwan. At the time of construction, the Taichung Coal Power Plant was built to be the biggest of its kind, to provide an immediate solution to the irrational fear of running out of electricity. This fear originated in the government, but it spread throughout the country because Taiwan was still a developing nation. The irony here is that the biggest power plant was not nearly big enough. In 2000, the deputy manager of Taichung Construction Department predicted that Taiwan will be short of electricity in the future, suggesting a need to construct a new coal power plant. So, in the year 2000, the Taiwan Power Company built yet another power plant. The construction of such power plants points to people's scale of temporality. People are so focused on the now and the immediate future that they tend to ignore and remain oblivious to the horrible consequences that may come many years down the line. But for this specific coal power plant, the many years down the line took just 25 years. One of the most impactful products of slow violence, biomagnification, became the terrible result of modern development. For those listeners out there who are sort of confused by biomagnification and what it is, allow me to explain. Rachel Carson, an ecologist by nature, published the book Silent Spring in 1962. Rachel Carson essentially birthed the American conservation movement. The preeminent revolutionary that she was, she started looking at biology from an object-oriented ontological perspective, or triple O, as Morton likes to call it, asking whether and why humans have the right to control nature, to decide who lives and who dies. Rachel Carson also showed to the public for the first time that all biological systems were dynamically connected in some shape or form. She introduced the concept of biomagnification, which is properly defined as the concentration of toxins in an organism as a result of its ingesting of other plants or animals, in which the toxins are more widely dispersed. Rachel Carson also found evidence of biomagnification in the global concentrations of DDT, or dichlorodiphenyltrichloroethane. DDT was originally used as pesticide, but this chemical found its way into producers in the water. And because concentrations increase by a factor of about 10 at each level of the food chain, a 0.23 ppm parts per million concentration of DDT was found in the first level, the consumer such as small fish. Then, as DDT gradually moved up the food chain, it culminated in it being 13.8 parts per million in eagles. And because of such a high concentration of DDT, eagle eggs were too fragile for baby chicks to hatch. Furthermore, DDT, humans' original innovation to better the food supply, eventually made it back to their own food supply in the seafood that we ate. And just keep in mind, this was 50 years before Rob Nixon's theory of slow violence, and also Morton's theory of hyperobjects. And now, back to what we were just talking about. Biomagnification as a result of modern development. In Taiwan's Changhua District, 24 kilometers away from the power plant, local dairy farmers have transitioned from feeding milk cows, local grass, to using imported alfalfa from Australia and grass from Southern California. The reason for that? Dioxin concentrations were found in milk products. Taichung Coal Power Plant is currently the world's largest emitter of dioxin and carbon dioxide emissions. Dioxin dissolves in fat, but not water. If a man consumes food contaminated by dioxin, the toxins will accumulate in the body as it will dissolve in fat, and eventually become carcinogenic. Dioxin, aka the poison of the century, is highly toxic, causing liver malfunction, metabolism irregulation, cardiovascular system anomalies, hypertension, miscarriages, stillbirth, fetal anomaly, genetic intellectual disorders, as well as respiratory tract-related cancers. Dioxin can even be transferred to infants by their mothers through nursing. Statistics in Taiwan show that 33% of milk, 47% of eggs, 3% of rice, and 83% of clams are from the Yulin and Changhua districts, two important districts which provide important food sources to the rest of the island. These two districts are extremely close to the Taiwan power plant. Evidence shows that this area is 10 to 100 times more toxic than normal dioxin levels. And because dioxin accumulates easily on the leaves of plants, this area has a pollutant standard index, aka PSI of 69, which is almost double the average PSI of 35. Sadly, the effects are just now showing. Male mortality rate caused by bronchitis, lung cancer, and tracheal problems are rising yearly, with the highest number of cancer patients in Taichung ranked first in Taiwan. Yet, the Taiwanese government continues to try and build more coal plants. Rob Nixon's quote is perfect here. Confronted with the militarization of both commerce and development, impoverished communities are often assailed by coercion and bribery that tests their cohesive resilience. As a result of slow violence, biomagnification of dioxin concentrations continues to kill humanity. But all of this can be traced in Morton's and Nixon's synonymous view that humans think on a scale of temporality drastically different than that of the Earth's own scale of temporality. The coal industry is a human-made apparatus of death named modern development. The government unknowingly perpetuates slow violence to cause the destruction of lives. And humans, despite knowing of this plant's damaging effects, continue to operate and increase the scale of this industry. Pollution, addiction, cancer, and deaths do not seem to matter. What matters is what people need and want, which is electricity, and built spaces to provide that. Biomagnification exemplifies what Morton talks about in The Prisoner's Dilemma. He says, "Let us imagine the other prisoner as a future self with interests so different from one's own that to some extent she or he constitutes a different self. Not your reincarnation or someone else. You. Yourself. It's impossible for us to communicate with that person, and yet he or she will experience the consequences of our choices. Similar to the solution of the prisoner's dilemma, it is impossible to interact with yourself and simultaneously choose the best course of action, unless the two prisoners work together. Every single tiny decision that each person makes impacts the far-off future, when that person is dead. That means that every moment we enact a prisoner's dilemma, it's not a flaw or a failure. It's a necessary weakness, which allows us to regard the decision with some ethical obligation. Philosophers have called this a wicked problem. You can understand it, but we can't rationalize a solution to it." And even if we try to operate on the same scale of temporality as the planets and think of modern development as progressive and as objectively as we can, we fail. We have failed for decades and centuries. There have always been new inventions, architectural changes in modern development to better humanity throughout human history. 19th century post-colonial America is no exception to this facade. Slavery was ubiquitous in the South at this time, especially near and within the Mississippi River, which spans more than 2,000 miles all the way from Minnesota to Louisiana. The Mississippi River was a main artery of America's slavery-based economy, transporting boatfuls of cash crops and slaves who tended to them during the 1800s. But also, near the river were sugar plantations. Many plantation owners took advantage of the rich, arable lands by the water. Even though modern development and industrialization was growing, all of this was based off of slavery. After the Emancipation Proclamation and slavery ceased to exist legally, African American rural communities still abounded near the Mississippi. In the world today, there exists an 85-mile-long Louisiana-Mississippi chemical corridor, a heavily industrialized riverscape between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, populated predominantly by African Americans who descended directly from the slaves that occupied the same spaces earlier. However, by the mid-20th century, many large plantations were sold to petrochemical companies. These companies took advantage of cheap costs, lax environmental and labor regulations, tax exemptions, cheap feedstock, the same features that had attracted antebellum planters three generations earlier. The conversion of former plantations into chemical plants for modern development and industrialization exemplifies yet again the usage of modern development. This monster corporation takeover resulted in a corridor that now consists of seven oil refineries and 136 petrochemical facilities. Fast forward 30 years, residents, primarily low-income African Americans who can trace their ancestors to the slaves who toiled in those sugar plantations, started noticing something weird. An abundance of cancer cases within the community. The toxic smells, contested deaths, and gradual secretions of pollution, working slowly like biomagnification and slow violence, have arrived to the point of no return. In 2002, Louisiana had the second highest death rate from cancer in the United States. The national average is 206 deaths per 100,000 people. Louisiana had 237.3 deaths. This area became infamous and became known as Cancer Alley. Additionally, Louisiana had the 47th worst health among all 50 states. The parishes and neighborhoods along this chemical corridor are in the top 10% of toxic air pollutants. This industry has caused diabetes, lung cancer, stomach cancer, pancreatic cancer, and much, much worse. TRI, or Toxics Release Inventory, in 2000, showed that Louisiana ranked second in the nation for total on-site release of chemical waste. In 1969, DuPont opened a plant to manufacture chloroprene. Sold in 2005 to the Japanese company Denka, before undergoing investigation by the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, it was found that the neighborhood communities around this chloroprene plant were 700 times more likely than the national average to get cancer from air pollution. That's terrible. It's awful. We see such critical negative effects of biomagnification, not just in the electricity industry, but also in the chemical industry. So many corporations and organizations promote modern development, when in reality, this so-called modern development has been nothing but a cover-up for all the slow violence that occurs. Modern development has failed for decades, for centuries. As a matter of fact, let me use physics to prove apocalyptic modern development. This is going to be my best attempt to illustrate how the fourth dimension interacts with our concept of modern development. Let's imagine the fourth dimension. When people say time is the fourth dimension, what does that really mean? Let's start off by working our way up. The first dimension is a line with only one axis. The second dimension, however, is a plane with two axes. This allows for curved lines, squares, and circles. The third dimension adds one more axis, which allows for spheres and prisms. Dimensions 1 to 3 are spatial, which adds a way for each following dimension to change based on the previous dimension. Similarly, the fourth dimension adds a way for the third dimension to change. But the entropy-driven arrow of time behaves in ways that are different in the first three dimensions. We cannot call the fourth dimension spatial. Rather, we call it temporal. We have to understand that time is not an arrow. It bends and it stretches. Which is why we shouldn't call it time. Rather, we should call it duration. Time is a direction. In the same way, up and down are directions for our third dimension. Time and anti-time are ways to describe duration. We also have to take into account that none of these dimensions exist without one another. We understand multiple frames of 3D space, called depth. However, it's impossible to view things purely in the third dimension. When we think of a dragon, a cup of water, or a perfect three-dimensional cube with corresponding length, width, and depth. All of these are just ideas. But without using the fourth dimension, it's only a concept. We need the fourth dimension. in order to really exist and for us to perceive, it has to have duration. The fourth dimension. I'm going to reiterate here, time is not a dimension, it is a direction, which is changed from a state to another state. Coined by Bruce Sterling, the easiest way for us to visualize the fourth dimension is a spine. S-P-I-M-E. A long, undulating snake. A data set of a single person that represents a person's birth to a person's death. Depending on the point of view, every day our bodies are exchanging the atoms of the outside world with a constant cycle of repair. The spine is a much more interconnected snake of constant change and renewal as we drink water and breathe in oxygen. But nonetheless, it is a snake in which time exists in slices that we perceive. Let us now use a point, line, plane postulate here. Think of a point that encompasses the entire first dimension of length, and then find a point outside of that point. Then, draw a line to these two points. That allows for the second dimension of width. Again, think of another point which encompasses the entire second dimension, and then find a point outside of that first point, which gives us a third dimension, depth. For the fourth dimension, the point that encompasses the entirety of the fourth dimension would encompass the universe in space-time, reach from the beginning of the universe to the end of the universe. Past, present, and future are simultaneous iterations of this massive 4D point. As Albert Einstein once said, the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. Modern is not modern. It's just based on each slice of time. Like much of what Timothy Morton says, he advocates what he calls dark ecology, which holds that the much-feared catastrophe has, in fact, already occurred. We see the Taizong coal power plant, effects of biomagnification, and Cancer Alley as singular manifestations of development that has been happening since the beginning of time to final catastrophe. We can refer to our view of time as a straight line, aka human temporality. But because time changes, shifts, and curves, nature, or our planet's temporality, moves along its own unique line. The easiest example I could think of is when we sleep. When we sleep, our perception and consciousness views time slowly, whereas the planet moves quicker on its own temporality. The apocalypse has indeed happened because humanity exists on a different temporal scale than planet Earth. Finally, we will look at nuclear power, the supposed answer to the fear of running out of electricity. Like many of the examples that we have looked at, it is not so much an answer as it is a failure, a glimpse of the apocalypse. Fukushima, Three Mile Island, and Chernobyl all share one thing in common. They were extremely rare accidents. In terms of human death and climate change, the total risk of failure in nuclear plants is far less than the risk associated with a world running purely on carbon-based fossil fuels. But is it? In Morton's books, there's a symbol of the Ouroboros, a snake eating its own tail, which originates from ancient Egyptian iconography, symbolizing the infinite cycle of life and death. Nuclear waste products don't go anywhere. They are so terribly radioactive, and if released, causes irreversible consequences. Using coal and fossil fuels is similar. Only instead of radiation, global warming is a negative consequence. after half a century of more than a billion pounds of nuclear waste in storage, the US Department of Defense has resorted to giving depleted uranium to arms manufacturers for free. After all, no one wants to take this waste product. Nixon says, "This result is a kind of anti-environmental recycling that converts highly toxic waste into even more deadly explosive forms." With all the favorable statistics for nuclear power, humanity has failed to recognize the negative consequences. We are simply delaying the inevitable catastrophe. Despite the flashy warning signs of nuclear leakage seen in Fukushima and Chernobyl, people are too focused on the now in everyday life. We are not going to realize it until it is too late, that nuclear power is not the answer. As a matter of fact, there is no answer. In the Anthropocene, Morton says, we must wake up to the fact that we never stood apart from or controlled the non-human things on the planet, but have always been thoroughly bound up with them. We can't even burn, throw, or flush things away without them coming back to us in some form, such as harmful pollution. Our most cherished ideas about nature and the environment, that they are separate from us and relatively stable, have been destroyed. We can experience hyperobjects in their local manifestations or through data produced by scientific measurements, but their scale and the fact that we are trapped inside them means that we can never fully know them. Morton says, because of such phenomena, we are living in a time of quite literally unthinkable change. When we take the fourth dimension into account, we realize that modern development, not only humans, are in a spine, a long, undulating snake of past, present, and future across space-time. There is no real concept of modern development and growth. Nuclear power, coal plants, and chemical facilities are not the future. They are focused, localized manifestations of action within a slice of time. Perhaps there's development at each phase, but slow violence will prevail. There is only the birth and the eventual end of the universe. It's like taking a step forward, but taking two steps back. However, if we give up the delusion of controlling everything around us, we might refocus ourselves on the pleasure that we take in other people and life itself. Live a little. Breathe a little. Love the environment. Find your passion. We are capable of doing so many great things, spreading love, passion, and energy. We are given this one planet to do whatever we can. By understanding the true nature of reality and the hidden meaning of so-called modern development, I think, is the first big step.